the University of Mississippi, the one and only one, the flagship university.
Now time for another edition of the Rebel Wives Live podcast, presented by Rebels 247 of the 24/7 Sports Network. Complete coverage of Ole Miss athletics and recruiting news from the Rebels 247 staff, David Johnson, Michael Court, and Dave Bevin. Rebel Wives Live is also available free in the iTunes store. Now, here's your host, David Johnson.
As the Ole Miss football team taking a little time off, some of them over in Haiti on a mission trip this week. And if you'd like to take a look at some of the things the Rebels are doing, we've got a photo gallery up on the front page, so be sure to click on that. Certainly good work being done by Hugh Freeze and his Ole Miss football program on the island nation of Haiti. Third consecutive year, the Rebels have made this mission trip, and it seems to get a little more popular with each passing stream. So kudos to those guys who are using their spring break over in Haiti trying to help their fellow man. The Ole Miss basketball team, of course, they're enjoying their spring break this week as the Rebels fell to make a postseason tournament, not the NCAA, not the NIT. We haven't talked about that since the Rebels were shown from the NIT tournament, but you know, a little bit of hope on Saturday before Selection Sunday. Some of these so-called experts had the Rebels in the NIT as a 5 seed, some as a 6 seed. But when the show went down Sunday night, Michael Quirk, Ole Miss, nowhere to go, no games left to play, the end of the Stephon Moody era, all came to a screeching halt. And, you know, let's get your thoughts on that. You cover this Ole Miss basketball team for Rebels 247. You had a front row seat the entire season. But, Michael, at the end of the day, hard to find a quality win for Ole Miss throughout the entire season. Several debilitating losses that were definitely considered bad by selection committees for these postseason tournaments. And honestly, outside of Stephon Moody, who had just had an incredible individual season, first team All-SEC by the coaches and the Associated Press, perhaps some All-American honors or acknowledgments coming Stephon Moody's way in the coming days. We'll see about that. It's kind of hard to find a bright spot. Even though this team did win 20 games, it's the 20 that they won that none were really that impressive. Michael, your thoughts on that?
Yeah, they only played 4 teams that made it to the NCAA tournament this year, and they went 1-3 in those, win over Vanderbilt, of course, at home, and then losses against Seton Hall, Kentucky, and Texas A&M. And I think that this year was you know, there was, of course, hope coming off an NCAA tournament run. You return Stephon Moody, but there were a lot of losses off of last year's team when you look at MJ Rhett, Jarvis Summers, Snoop White, Aaron Jones, just to name a few, that you didn't really know what to expect out of this year's team. And as the season really got going, you realize that this is not the most talented bunch that Kennedy's had, was not the deepest team, was not the tallest team. And you can't really say they exceeded or underperformed above preseason prognosticators. It's just sort of, you know, it was just sort of what you expected out of this team. It was a fantastic season from Stephon Moody. There was, of course, a lot of development from Sebastian Saiz, who went from potential to, you know, realizing his potential and going into a senior campaign. He should be Ole Miss hopes that he can make another similar jump like he did from his sophomore to junior campaign. And, you know, looking ahead to next year, there's a lot of talk about Stephon Moody being gone. But, of course, you know, DeAndre Burnett's coming to town, and I can't think of a time when Ole Miss didn't have sort of a premier scorer. And that's in part because of their offense, and Kennedy's really good at spotting talent
that can fit the offense. And whether it's Marshall Henderson or it's or Clay Sanders or Abernathy or Chris Warren or Moody, and Burnett's going to be that guy. Burnett's going to be the guy that you know, you sort of talked about with a Stephon Moody or Marshall Henderson in the past. And so, you know, there's a little hope going forward. You should see some attrition for this team in the offseason like you've seen in years past. We're over half the team from last year did not come back to this year either due to transfers or graduation. And you should likely see, you know, a decent amount of attrition this year as well. There are only four seniors, but you'll certainly see some transfers and some defections. And, but the core will remain the same of Saiz, Burnett, and of course, Marcanus Hyman. So that core should be back. And once we see what this team looks like in the summer, then we'll be able to get a better gauge on what they're going to be in 2016-2017.
All right, Dave. Now, for all practical purposes, you have a decade worth of Andy Kennedy's work to look at and examine as the leader of this Ole Miss basketball program. And Kennedy has done exceptional work. I don't think anybody can argue against that. 20-win seasons have become the norm, the routine in Oxford, but they seem to have also become the ceiling in Oxford. Granted, the new pavilion is now in place, and you know there is a school of thought that will help Ole Miss in recruiting, and maybe you've seen that a little bit already with the opening of the pavilion. But Dave, I'll present this to you. Are Ole Miss fans in a position where they simply have to settle that this is the best it's going to be for Ole Miss basketball, that they're going to be a perennial winner under Andy Kennedy? Every year they're going to be on the bubble or right outside the bubble, and maybe every 3 or 4 years they have a team that's squarely in the NCAA tournament. But certainly a team that's not in the NCAAs every year. Is that good enough? That's the first thing I'll ask you. And secondly is, you know, there's an element out there that kind of thinks that more needs to be done, more must be gained. But there's also an element out there that's like, you know, you run Andy Kennedy off and you don't know what's going to happen. Right now you have a consistent winner. Dave, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, we've brought this up in previous podcasts, and Michael, you know, he's made a good point about this in the past. You know, if you're looking for something better or, you know, a different coach, what are you going to get, you know, if you were to, you know, let go an Andy Kennedy who has consistently won 20 games? And like Michael has pointed out, if you're going to be looking at some top-tier coaches, you know, what are they going to look at that? You know, when you're looking at their resume, what are they going to, you know, expect? You know, they're going to think they're coming into, you know, incredibly too high of expectations if that's how you're going to look at it. And, you know, Ole Miss basketball.
Hold on one second now. Let me ask you that question this way. If Hugh Freeze was entering his fifth season in Oxford and he had strung together a 7-5 season, and then 3-6-6 seasons all in a row, which you could probably equivocate that to being a 20-win basketball season that doesn't even get you in the NIT. You could probably say, okay, that equivocates to 6-6 in football. Would Ole Miss fans be okay with that? Would you be making the same argument that, well, you know, it took us to a bowl game 3 years ago, and you know, we don't have losing seasons, so You know, who knows what would happen if we made a change? Would that be the same school of thought applied to football that is, and I'm playing the devil's advocate here, that's all. I'm not saying that's how I feel about Andy Kennedy, because it's not, but just being the devil's advocate for the sake of our conversation here, would that be acceptable to the Ole Miss fan base with the football program? Yes or no?
No.
That's all I'm asking.
No.
No. Okay,
no.
Michael, yes or no? Would that level of success be acceptable to the Ole Miss football fan base?
I don't really think that's a fair or equivalent question, saying that a 6-6 season is like a 20-win
season.
Okay,
let's say 7-5. 7-5.
And also, you have to look at, you can't really compare Ole Miss football with Ole Miss basketball. Ole Miss football has a tradition. There is in-state talent. There is, you know, there is the ability to win big here, and we've seen that in the past. Basketball's never proven. There's not fertile recruiting grounds. 25%
of the Ole Miss signing class this year was from the state of Texas.
Okay, but there's still Ole Miss is picking up all these top-rated recruits that you can get from in-state, and there's not really that amount in-state that you can go get. And Ole Miss doesn't have the brand in basketball. Hold on. Ole Miss doesn't have the brand in basketball.
There are 100 football players on the roster, and there are 15 basketball players. So, you know, the numbers are kind of out of proportion there when you're comparing that.
Yeah, and I mean, Ole Miss, is Ole Miss going to go to Texas or Florida or Georgia and pick out players? No, they're getting the scraps, and they always have been, and they likely always will be getting scraps.
Well, wait a minute. Now, that was kind of the same thought with Ole Miss recruiting before Hugh Freeze got here. Except for that little stretch where Ed Orgeron had some success, that was the same train of thought. You know, Ole Miss is going to have to go out to Texas and pick up the scraps or go to Florida and pick up the leftovers. Well, now they're going to Texas and getting who they want and going to Florida and having great success.
Yeah, but Ole Miss football is set up for success, and there's a lot there to succeed with. And
then
so
why can't not
Ole
Miss basketball
hold on, let me finish my point. If Ole Miss goes 6-6 for 3 years, then they're underperforming, and they're toward the back end of the SEC West, if not in last in the SEC West. If you look at Ole Miss basketball, they've been consistently in the top third, top half of the SEC, and they're not as easily set up for success, and that's why these type of seasons that Kendi has, that's overperforming at Ole Miss rather than underperforming, like if Freeze went 7-5 and then 3 straight 6-6.
I'm not getting your common denominator between the two that makes one team not going to postseason overperforming, another team not going to postseason underperforming. What is the baseline on that comparison there?
The baseline is Ole Miss is not a consistent 20-win program. Ole Miss is not a top third of the SEC-type basketball program. So by doing these type of things, that's overperforming the norm for Ole Miss basketball, overperforming what, you know, you see in all sorts of sports, the wins above replacement. Andy Kendi wins above replacement of, you know, the typical Ole Miss basketball coach is, you know, he's exceeding what's typically done at Ole Miss. If Freeze is going 6-6, 6-6, then that's certainly underperforming, and that's performing below the norm.
Underperforming compared to who? Compared to Houston Nutt? Compared to Ed Orgeron? Compared to David Cutcliffe?
Below expectations, we'll say that.
But who sets those expectations?
I don't think that was a fair way to characterize a 20-win basketball season and finishing 10-8, finishing in the top third of the conference.
Okay, well,
what is the same as beating four. A fair one would be, I don't know, maybe 8-4, because that means you swept your out of conference and then you finished at about .500 in conference.
Okay, so would there be questions right now if Hugh Freeze had went 8-4 three seasons in a row and won 8 games for the last 4 years about bumping the ceiling for the football
program? I'm sure that we'd have the same type of expectation or the same type of division that exists within Kennedy's tenure, where there'd be some saying, you know, 8-4, it's not too shabby, but there'd be some saying, hey, Ole Miss needs to not settle for mediocrity and try and go for better. So I'm sure that there'd be people on each side of the fence.
Well, and to say 20-win seasons are not the norm for Ole Miss basketball, I will point out 8 of the last 10 years Ole Miss has won at least 20 games. So it has become the norm under Andy Kennedy, yes. It has become the norm. And the question is, you know, is that the ceiling? And things show us that maybe it is. And should that be acceptable to the Ole Miss fan base? That's kind of what we're hashing around here. I'm playing the devil's advocate to Michael's argument. So, you know, honestly, my personal opinion, I feel like Andy Kennedy has done an exceptional job with the Ole Miss basketball program, considering where it came from and where it was before he arrived. There were some flashes under Rod Barnes and Rob Evans, but that was it, folks. Pretty much it, outside of some freakish win over Kentucky in the SEC tournament back when I was 10 years old. So, historically looking at it, Andy Kennedy is the Johnny Vaught of the Ole Miss men's basketball program. But as we've talked about before, the pressure, there's got to be more pressure. It's just the natural progression of things with the new arena and the expectations tagged to that arena that recruiting will get better, thus the program will find more success. But we're just hashing that around. Dave, I mean, you've kind of been setting this one out. Talk your two cents.
Well, you know, I tend to agree with Michael, you know, that what Andy Kennedy's done, I mean, it is beyond, way above the expectations than where he was previously at. And we've talked about before, you look at, it starts with recruiting. And Ole Miss, historically, it's been a struggle for recruiting because you're competing against, you know, a Big Ten top-tier school such as like an Indiana or somewhere in the Big 12. The two schools that stick out to my mind in the SEC who's ever had success, major success in basketball, that's Kentucky, and Florida has had very good glimpses of that as well. And Kentucky's just that historic, you know, program. They're like the Alabama of how Alabama is with football. And it's just that historic tradition that Kentucky has had for many years. Ole Miss football many years ago was a top-tier team in the entire country, like they are getting back to today. And, you know, Andy Kennedy's with this opening of the pavilion, maybe that will help with recruiting because your recruits, they're going to look at the facilities. They're going to look at the facilities and see, you know, am I playing in a top-notch facility? Of course, the pavilion is that. Ole Miss football facilities, they're taking their major renovations as well. That's also, you know, consider a huge bump in recruiting as well. So that's where, you know, I've said in the past, that's where it starts with is recruiting. Where Ole Miss has lacked in the past is because of recruiting, and that is because of, you know, that lack of, you know, tradition of Ole Miss basketball over the years. And once you set the ceiling, once you exceed the expectations, there's always new expectations. I mean, you look at Mike Bianco in baseball. You know, before he came to Ole Miss, there was a tremendous drought in success with Ole Miss baseball. When he arrived, you know, Ole Miss started consistently recruiting well, going to NCAA tournaments, and then it became, well, why are we not going to a super regional? Well, finally we get to a super regional, well, then why are we not going to the World Series? And that finally came a couple years back. So anytime you build success, there's always going to be, from a fan base perspective, new expectations.
All makes sense. I think everybody's got valid points here. In Andy Kennedy's tenure at Ole Miss, which started with the 2006-2007 season, two NCAA tournament appearances. That's a 20%. Now, you can come back and argue where two out of the last 4 years this program has been to the NCAA. Very, very true. Dave, you bring up Mike Bianco. And, Michael, I'll pose you the football-basketball comparison in a basketball-baseball comparison. Two trips to the NCAA tournament in 10 years for Mike Bianco. How would he be viewed if that were the case?
He'd be on his way out.
That's where I'm foggy. What is the difference in basketball versus baseball versus football with Ole Miss? Because really and truly, before Mike Bianco got here, the level of success of the Ole Miss baseball program was not of any great magnitude. A couple of College World Series appearances back in the 60s and one in the early 70s, that was it.
Let me pose it to you this way. If you saw Mark Stoops up at Kentucky start winning 8 games a year and, winning Music City Bowls and things like that up in Lexington, and after a few years of going 8-4, Kentucky canned Mark Stoops because he just kept going, 8 wins, how would you view that firing from Kentucky?
I'm not a Mark Stoops fan, but I get your point. It is a settling issue. Kentucky fans would certainly settle for consistent 8-4 football seasons. Therefore, Ole Miss fans should settle for consistent 20-win basketball seasons. That's your point. Am I right?
Yeah, because it could certainly be a lot worse, and it has been a lot worse for Ole Miss basketball. And, there isn't the ceiling where Ole Miss could ever be a Kentucky or a Kansas or a UNC. So I guess, sort of finishing with a respectable basketball program with a coach who's the winningest coach in school history and widely respected by his peers, I certainly think it could be far worse, especially when you look at, the current success of the Ole Miss basketball program or the Ole Miss athletics as a whole. And you look at the trajectory of the Ole Miss basketball program where they have gotten better in the last few years. He has built something. He has a new arena to use. And so, there's certainly an upward trajectory. It'd be a little more alarming if it was sort of the Kevin Stallings track, where Stallings, had Vanderbilt as a 4 or 5 seed in the NCAA tournament consistently, and now they've sort of been a lame duck going to NITs, needing a miracle run in SEC to go to the NCAA tournament, and this year barely getting in by the skin of their teeth in the RPI, but then getting knocked out by 20. And Stallings is likely on his way out of Kentucky. So I think you have to take into account the trajectories of the program.
Okay, so when Hugh Freeze goes out and recruits football players, he is unabashedly talking to them about winning a national championship in Oxford, Mississippi. He has been since day one, since the day he took the job. That's been the message he's been selling. And it's being accepted by these recruits, and it's producing results. But if that is what your mindset is, and we're talking about recruiting and how the Pavilion can help this recruiting, how does that sell on the recruiting trail, Dave, when you're saying, hey, we're going to win consistently, we're not going to win big, come be a part of us? How does that message get translated out there into the basketball world if that's in fact where Ole Miss basketball is?
I mean, you definitely would have to look at what you have now and build success with what you have now. Andy Kennedy has done that with the SEC tournament win, had those glimpses in the NCAA tournament. But as far as the newness factor of it, maybe Kennedy, could have done that in his very beginnings, at Ole Miss. Hugh Freeze has built his success, from the beginning. As far as I'm talking about the recruiting aspect of it, he built his success of saying, "Hey, come try something new here at Ole Miss. Let's go win us a championship." Andy Kennedy, been in the program for several years now. I think, at this point, if you're going to excel in recruiting and start bringing in top-notch players, you're already given a bump, a good positive bump with building a new facility. But in the same token, I think you still have to prove something out there for a season or two of major success.
Well, for the record, we're having a very spirited discussion today, mainly,
I love it.
Mainly because the NCAA tournament is going on and the Ole Miss Rebels are not in it. So that makes it very topical on this St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you as well. So that's why we're hashing all of this out. And it is being discussed amongst the Ole Miss fan base, as it has become almost tradition to do so every year at this time. And You know, it is what it is. And I like Michael's analogy of if Stoops were winning 8 games a year at Kentucky, the Kentucky faithful certainly would be satisfied because they just haven't had any success on the gridiron in recent memory. Not much to speak of. Not since big Jared Lorenzen was throwing the ball around for Hal Mumme. So I get that. I totally get that. You know, the gray area, the foggy area is, are fans greedy for wanting better, or should fans settle and be happy with what they have? You know, and that's the million-dollar question, and there are people on both sides of the fence right there. My personal opinion, Ole Miss will do no better than Andy Kennedy. And you do have a consistent winner, whether they're in or out of the NCAA tournament with each and every passing year, whether they're in or out of the NIT tournament. He's going to put you a respectable product on the floor. They're going to play hard, and they're going to break your heart at the end. That's just kind of how the story goes. Is there another tier for this program to climb? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you look at some successful coaches, particularly in football. Virginia Tech could have fired Frank Beamer early in his career. They stuck with him. He built a program that ascended to national prominence. So maybe the same thing will happen with Andy Kennedy and his basketball program here at Ole Miss. But just a spirited discussion today on that, in the spirit of it being NCAA Tournament Day. We were bound to bring this up. We can move on to some happier pastures, though. Let's talk about this Ole Miss baseball team. 12 wins in a row, off to a 17-1 start. 17-1 start, man, that's got to mean something special is going on with this team, right? Mm-hmm. Not so fast. Totally. Not so fast. It's happened before. These Rebels have rolled off to 17-1 and 18-1 starts before. And things not end up in Omaha, obviously. But they have been very impressive, particularly on this 12-game win streak. A team batting average over 300 throughout the streak. The team earned run average over the last 12 games is 1.82. Now check out this stat. Over their last 10 games, the Ole Miss bullpen has worked 35 innings. In those 35 innings, they've allowed exactly one earned run in 35 innings. You got Kobe Bortles, Will Golson. Bortles has a 10-game hitting streak going into the Tennessee series. Golson has a 9-game hitting streak. They're kind of clicking. Now you can sit back and you can see, you know, they're making some miscues in the field that hasn't really cost them yet. Maybe not some timely hitting. They're leaving men on base. But Michael Quirk, this team's 17-1, and they've won their last 12. It's hard to argue with that, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. This team is you really have to like what you're seeing on all cylinders. But between the fact that 7 different players that qualify as starters are hitting above 300, you have home runs from every regular starter except for Connor Cloyd and Holt Purdzok. I mean, the Rebels are just really clicking on offense. And you look at 162 hits on the year and 134 runs. So they're really, you know, making the most out of it. They scored 5 runs in an inning 6 different times. When we were previewing this team on some podcasts before the season, I was saying, you know, this looks like a team that's going to bat around a lot. They have a lot of different guys that can hit. They're a very patient team at the plate, and they can get some big innings. And we've seen that. We've seen them bat around quite a bit in the inning, in a lot of innings here. And like you said, this bullpen has been terrific between Wyatt Short, who has 4 saves and is yet to allow a run. Connor Green, 2 freshmen, he's yet to allow a run in 5 appearances. Dallas Wolfolk has pitched 7 innings. He has yet to allow a run. He's logged a save as he's been just blistering in the mid-90s with his fastball. And sort of the really happy surprise is Sean Johnson, Brady Bramlett, and Chad Smith all pitching well. Smith has a little higher ERA in the mid-4s. But you look at Sean Johnson, sub 2 ERA, he's 3-0. Brady Bramlett, an ERA just over 2, he's 4-0. And he's been striking out batters at a very high rate, about 1.5 per inning. And so you see that this team is getting really deep. And Bianco has said that this could very well be his best defensive team. You've seen some miscues in the field from Will Golson, who made the transition over to first base this year. You've seen some from Errol Robinson. Colby Bortles made a couple the other day. And Tate Blackman has had a few miscues in the field. But this team will get it together. You've seen this outfield is very dynamic, very fast, can make plays. You have a big, big arm in J.B. Woodman out there. And so they're really clicking together. And something that's big is the development of the DH. We really didn't know who's going to be the DH, whether it's Cole Perzak or if it was DJ Miller. But Michael Fitzsimmons has done well. He's hitting over 350 and has shown some pop with 4 extra base hits. Holt Herzog, who's gotten the majority of starts over there, he's hitting at a 321 clip. And then, of course, you have Ryan Olenek, who is hitting very well and really has shown that he can be versatile, play left field, shortstop. He can be the DH, he can play first. So, you know, there's a lot of versatility and the team's depth is really amazing. That's a big reason why they're 17-1.
Ole Miss will put this 17-1 mark on the line this weekend. SEC opening weekend in Knoxville against the Tennessee Volunteers. And some news coming out of Tennessee with their baseball program. Actually, just a few moments ago, as Tennessee coach Dave Serrano has confirmed that Tennessee's best in the field player, second baseman Jeff Moberg, he's the leadoff hitter for the Volunteers. He tore his ACL and his meniscus Tuesday against UNC Asheville. He is out for the season. So a blow for the Tennessee program, who had already lost some pretty good pitching up there this year due to injury as well. Rebels, Volunteers, 6 o'clock Friday night, 6 Central Time from Rocky Top. And you know, looking at this weekend, I mean, Ole Miss obviously entering hot. A chance for the Rebels to do some great things up in Tennessee. What if they opened SEC play with a sweep of the Volunteers, Michael, and came back to Oxford 20-1 and 3-0 in the SEC? They're ranked 8th in the nation right now per collegiate baseball. They have a bullet by their names and maybe even break into the top 5, depending on what happens in other action.
Yeah, absolutely. You see, there's some really hotly contested matchups going on in the SEC this weekend. Vanderbilt will host Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Arkansas will do battle. But there are some solid matchups throughout the conference. And Tennessee is sort of toward the bottom, as like you said, they've been bit hard by the injury bug so far this year, and have really had to. Other than Zach Warren and Hunter Martin, have really had to do sort of a patch job with their rotation and with their bullpen, and their pitching staff has really not fared so well, and they haven't really gone up against any marquee competition. They had a 3-game series against Memphis at a neutral site and took 2 or 3 there. They went to the Grand Canyon Classic out in Arizona, and they won all 4 games in the Grand Canyon Classic, but it was out there and playing against Grand Canyon, St. Mary's, Central Michigan, Cincinnati. So, you know, not really any daunting competition. And so they entered this series at 11-5, and it's certainly a very, very winnable series. You expect Ole Miss to at least go 2-1 there. 1-2 would be a bit of a surprise, and also would not be the way that they want to start conference plays, by losing 2 of 3 to one of the lesser SEC opponents on their schedule. As they did get a great draw out of the East in not playing Florida or Vanderbilt. That was a quality draw for Ole Miss, but yeah, you certainly want to get it off with a sweep this weekend, and then UT Martin, which, you know, seems to be the annual score 20 runs in a game that usually seems to happen against UT Martin every year, but then you have the big home SEC opener against South Carolina, and so if you can get to 21-1 with South Carolina coming to town, you're certainly going to see Ole Miss probably within that top five, if not inching closer to it, with a big opportunity against the Gamecocks looming in Oxford next weekend.
Should be a lot of fun. And sticking on the diamond, the Ole Miss softball team, I mean, we've talked about their hot start.
Mm-hmm.
And they waded into SEC play last weekend, lost 2 of 3 to 13th-ranked Missouri here in Oxford. So they're 23-5 now after knocking off Louisiana Monroe and Central Arkansas in midweek games, 1-2 in the SEC. They are on the road in Lexington this weekend against 13th-ranked Kentucky, 23-3. Kentucky 3-0 inside the SEC. So we get to see if Coach Smith's crew is for real, because we've talked about this before, Dave. Their pre-conference mm-hmm. schedule a little bit suspect on who they had the victories against. Certainly promising to see them be able to squeak out a game against a team as good as Missouri last weekend. But things only get tougher for them as they trek through the SEC. Again, 23-5, 1-2 in the SEC at 13th-ranked Kentucky. And those Wildcats are 23-3, 3-0. That series starts Friday as well. 5 o'clock Central Time start on Friday, 2 o'clock Saturday, noon on Sunday. So, Dave, I mean, I don't know. Have we seen enough of the Ole Miss softball team yet to think that they are for real, or is this a team that's going to trend more towards 500 the deeper they get into the SEC schedule?
You know, I tend to give them another weekend. David, as you mentioned, you know, that the out-of-conference schedule to start the season wasn't really high up there as far as strength of schedule-wise. But then you're hitting into back-to-back SEC plays with against ranked SEC opponents. I will, in a way, I give them a benefit of a doubt with some weather delays over the weekend. Weather was nasty in Oxford last weekend. The baseball team had their delays as well. So with traveling to Kentucky, that will be a challenge for them in Lexington. So let's see what they do this weekend.
Yeah, I think within the next 8-9 days or so, you're going to know what they're all about. They'll go to Memphis next week after returning from Kentucky for a single game. And then they go out to Oklahoma City to play Oklahoma State, and a pretty good softball program out there with the Cowgirls. So I think you're going to get a pretty good feel about what Coach Mike Smith has with this group. They're a young team, and certainly hard to find criticism in a 23-5 start. And I don't know if I blame them for the somewhat soft pre-conference schedule, because – you know, when you've got a program you're trying to build, there has to be a point where you have to start building that confidence. And maybe that's what they've done thus far with this 23-5 start. So some great things going on, some big contests on the diamond for Ole Miss over the weekend. Let's turn quickly to football recruiting. A little news made there last night. 2016 quarterback Grant Restmeyer out of McKinney-Boyd High School out in the Dallas, Texas area, announces his intentions to walk on to the Ole Miss football program. That now gives Ole Miss 5 quarterbacks on their roster when fall camp opens up, assuming that Restmeyer will make the 105 and be out there for the first 2 weeks of fall practice. He may not. And you know how that works. You've got your 85 scholarship players, and then you can bring 20 preferred walk-ons to the first 2 weeks of camp. And then everybody else comes out after the first 2 weeks of camp. So we'll see if Restmeyer makes the 105 or whether or not he tags on after fall camp. But nevertheless, a 6'4", 200-pounder. I mentioned he's out of McKinney-Boyd High School, the same district out there as Allen High School, where Greg Little and Jalen Jones played. So a very, very tough district out there in Texas with a lot of talented players. Restmeyer threw for 2,182 yards, 19 touchdowns, and only 5 interceptions last season. Had a couple of Division II scholarship offers, preferred walk-on invitations at North Texas State and Texas State, and then preferred walk-on. That gets back to that 105. If you are preferred walk-on, then they've told you you're going to be in the 105 players to go through fall camp. Restmeyer not labeled a preferred walk-on at Ole Miss, but a walk-on I'm sure summer will dictate whether or not he is out there with the 105 when things get full underway in August. But he joins the staff and gives Ole Miss five quarterbacks. I kind of scratched my head a little bit, Michael, in that you look at the quarterback situation at Ole Miss. As a 2016 quarterback, with obviously Chad Kelly here for one more season, but then Shea Patterson and Jason Pellerin, both freshmen, takes a lot of nerves to walk onto a program like that if your goal is to get on that field.
Yeah, you certainly see that that the kid has to be a competitor, that he's not scared of the daunting quarterback situation that is Ole Miss when you have a Heisman hopeful, you have a highly talented and intelligent redshirt freshman, and then you have the most highly touted quarterback in the country who's, you know, in your class. And so you really have to respect that, but hey, I can't blame him. Worst case scenario is, you know, he gets to come to a beautiful campus filled with, let's say, some beautiful people. And, you know, he has the opportunity to get a ring or two while he's in Oxford. So, I can't blame him that far. And you have to love the competitive fire that he could go somewhere else and, you know, get some snaps right away or in a year or two, but and say he's going to come here and try his hand with the big boys.
Well, you know, and I talked with him a little while on the phone last night, and, I asked him why Ole Miss, any connections, any family connections or anything of that nature, none at all. He had attended a game here with a friend of his that he played baseball with once upon a time, loved the atmosphere, knew some people that had gone to school here, some people he went to high school with, but the biggest underlying factor was Eli Manning. He's a New York Giants fan, and Eli Manning played at Ole Miss, and so Mr. Ressmeyer wanted to follow in the footsteps. So it's kind of interesting what goes into the anatomy of a decision sometimes as to where these guys are going to play their college football. We opened up talking about the Ole Miss football team over in Haiti on spring break. They certainly should be applauded. Chad Kelly's over there. Breland Speaks is over there. Now, I've noticed Breland has stayed out of the photos being sent back to the mainland. Haven't seen him in any of the social media pics of the trip over there. Sean Rawlings is there. Talbot Fines is there. Armani Linton is there. Coach Freeze and his entire family there. Maurice Harris and his entire family there. And several other of the support staff and coaches all doing good work over in Haiti. And, again, they should certainly be applauded because, I guess they could all be down in Daytona Beach right now if they wanted to be, as I'm sure some of the Rebels are. I saw one Rebel, one Ole Miss player posting up some social media pics from Las Vegas. Looked like he's having a great time. We won't mention his name. But anyway, spring break, time to unwind, I guess, because when these Rebels get back, Sunday night, they've got a team meeting, so they'll all be reconvened in Oxford by Sunday night, and they'll hit the practice field again on Monday. Nine more practices left this spring, and spring is about to turn into serious business as some position battles wage on, and they're trying to figure out who can help them this fall and who may need a little bit more development time. So a lot of fun waiting for football right there. Recruiting-wise, the spring evaluation period will open up next month, and things will kind of get full swing. You'll start seeing a lot more offers popped out as the coaches can hit the road, and the high school players and JUCO players will be going through spring practice. So we have all of that to look forward to as well. All right, it's St. Patrick's Day. I hope everybody's got their green on. Let's do our closing thoughts. Michael, we'll begin with you.
I saw something interesting on Twitter. I think it might have been yesterday or the day before, and I retweeted it. It's that Laquan Treadwell said that he lost his iguana, which made me think a couple of things. One, if you're going to go with a pet, I guess, you know, being a football player, you're very busy. Maybe you don't have the time for a dog, but an iguana was an interesting choice. I never pegged him as an iguana guy, so hopefully he gets drafted in some warm temperatures. And two, how do you lose an iguana? I really, really hope that he's not letting that thing walk around freely in the house. That would be alarming that you're going over to Laquan Treadwell's house for a cup of tea, and then all of a sudden there's an iguana out there. As someone who lived in the Florida Keys and had to deal with those nasty creatures day in and day out, I certainly know I wouldn't want one inside the house. I almost had one scurry inside, but luckily I deterred him away. And I guess we won't have Laquan and I won't be having any meet-up play dates for our animals, considering my coonhounds killed a few iguanas in his day. He's a little ruthless towards those little critters. But, I just found that very strange and interesting. We knew that Christian Trent had that little cat called Kitty who would ride around in the car with him that I'm sure he has with the Brewers now. But never pegged Laquan for an iguana guy. I never thought that.
Well, the iguana very well could have read the headlines coming out of Minneapolis that the Minnesota Vikings are planning on bringing Laquan Treadwell in next month for a set-down interview, and that they are very interested in making him a part of their team. So maybe the iguana, not kind of liking the potential of living up in that Minnesota winter climate.
Smart iguana, then.
Yeah. He may not have lost him. The iguana may have left him.
Jailbreak.
If he's going to end up in Minnesota. Well, all right, Dave, your closing thoughts.
Well, as you both know, I've been sick all weekend and then through into this week. Finally getting my voice back and just glad to start feeling better. March Madness, you know, starting to kick off. You know, unfortunately, Ole Miss is not in the postseason, but I still love the March Madness tournament. The NCAA tournament, it's one of the most energetic postseason sports that NCAA basketball. I just truly enjoy. 247 Sports has their real-time bracket app that is available in the App Store. I think you can even still you know, you won't get the full to complete a full bracket, but I think you could still join and complete a partial bracket right now. David, and you and I, we've completed a full bracket today. Duke has knocked off NC Wilmington, and then Butler won. So I know I picked those two. My bracket's starting off pretty good. I don't know how yours is doing, but I'm starting off pretty good right now.
Well, I know I picked Duke to win. I think I picked Butler to win as well. I'll have to check in on that and see. But it won't be long and my bracket will be busted. It's the way it goes every single year. All right, my closing thought is I'm going to go back to what we were talking about earlier in the podcast and the Ole Miss basketball program and how the pavilion may help. And is it even a factor in recruiting moving forward? I think you'd have to be blind or foolish to say it's not a factor. It is. But is a facility something that everyone has to have to become a powerhouse program? The answer is no, folks. And I'll just lay it on the line here. Have you ever been to Duke University's Cameron Indoor Stadium? Have you ever seen the place? Number one, it looks like a brick classroom building from the outside. Very nice old architecture. Don't get me wrong. But it kind of looks like a high school gym from the outside. And the inside, to be honest with you, kind of looks like a high school gym. It seats 9,300. Was opened up many, many, many years ago. One of the most revered venues in all of college basketball, and not from an amenity standpoint, simply because of what happened in the building and what continues to happen in the building. And that is Duke fielding winning basketball programs that are national contenders year in and year out. They have their own fan base, the Cameron Crazies, as they're called. So I only say that to say that there will be pressure put on Andy Kennedy because he's playing in a new building. His team has a new facility. But for those of you who think that a new arena is a magic bullet, it is not. It can help. There's no doubt about it. But it is not. So don't judge Andy Kennedy moving forward of having a magic bullet in his holster of the pavilion and all of a sudden he should be recruiting like John Calipari at Kentucky. That's not going to happen just because of ability. And the new arena should not be an albatross around the neck of Andy Kennedy. It's great to have. It will help. But it's not an answer to all questions. And that's my closing thought for the day. So, guess that'll do it for us on this Thursday, March 17th. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you from all of us. For Dave Bevan, Michael Quirk. Michael, I really enjoyed the spirited exchange today. That was really good. I'm David Johnson for 247 Sports. And as always, hotty toddy.